Thanks, Liz. And thanks to Tosca for organising today. And thanks to the Bodleian, not only for hosting, but also for supplying in the midst of lockdown some great archival material, which I'll introduce later on in the show. This is a co-presentation between myself, Ben Thorpe, and my colleague, Mike Heffernan. We'll both be here for questions at the end. But for now, I'm going to spend the next 15 minutes talking you through the political cartographies of Martha Reichmann. So Martha Reichmann was born in 1910, died in 1964. She was ethnically Polish-Jewish, though in practice she was very much an internationalist figure. She lived for barely 2 years in Polish territories, and she developed an internationalist form of cartography. And she was something of a celebrity in her day, renowned, as one review put it, for her high standards of clarity, simplicity, and accuracy. And her name was attached to best-selling popular atlases. Her period of fame was relatively brief. From about 1938 to 1944 was when she published most of her works, when she was between the ages of just 28 and 34, which is a rather sobering thought. But in that period, she published a substantial and significant body of work. And in what follows, I'm going to take a kind of broadly chronological path through her life, her education, her career, and I'll weave in her political cartographies, her geoeconomic, broadly socialist cartography, her anti-fascist cartography, and her geostrategic cartography. And I'll probably spend most time on the anti-fascist cartography in this talk, particularly in relation to Sheila Grant Duff's work, Europe and the Czechs. So she was the daughter of Ludwig Reichmann, the renowned Polish physician and bacteriologist. She was his second daughter, born in 1910 in what was then Austrian Poland in Krakow. But the family moved swiftly to London, where Ludwig was appointed by the Royal Institute of Public Health and where the family lived during the war. During the war, Ludwig became more politically active, and immediately upon the cessation of hostilities, he returned to Warsaw, where with the backing of the new Polish government, he set up a National Institute of Epidemiology. And his good work there meant that he was noticed by Eric Drummond, who appointed him as the very first director of the League of Nations' new health section. And the family moved again to Geneva. There, Ludwig, along with another employee of the League of Nations, Arthur Sweetser, and their wives, Maria and Ruth, the Geneva-based educationists, Adolf Ferrier and Paul Mayhofer, plans for the world's first international school. The international school in Geneva, known as Ecolin, founded in 1924. The Reichmanns would be in charge of recruitment and the Sweetsers in charge of finance. Now, one of the most notable recruits that Reichmann made was the pacifist geographer Paul Dupuis, who at the age of 70 retired from a long and distinguished career at the École Normale Supérieure in Paris to teach at Ecolin from 1925. Dupuis extended the founding philosophy of the international school into his teaching. He believed that geography and cartography should be taught from an international standpoint. He was also a believer in active teaching methods and made his students practice cartography by drawing maps that would illustrate the geopolitical subjects of the day. And here I'm drawing on work by Federico Ferretti. We see Dupuis standing at the back next to this great wall map in his classroom here. This is an example of this is a map of a set of maps produced by Dupuis' students hanging in on the side of his, the wall of his classroom. And Dupuis developed a special bond with Martha Reichmann. Here we see a hand-drawn map of his ready to be mounted on a globe, which he dedicated to Martha Reichmann and remains in the possession of her family. We see this also in Reichmann's own recollections. Here she is writing in 1946. And in fact, here she is in this photo. Martha Reichmann is sat here, second right, and Dupuis stood again at the blackboard. She recalls, I think, with emotion about the years spent at Ecole and spent principally as a student of Mr. Dupuy. It seems to me that every faculty of logical and intelligent work I owe to this professor and dear friend. In 1929, she graduated from Ecole, studied for a couple of years at Conservatoire in Geneva, and in 1931, she goes to study geography at the Sorbonne. The department there was headed by Emmanuel de Marton, who was at that very time developing a course on cartography, which he envisioned as a kind of a professional training course, which would last 1.5 years and would train 5 cartographer geographers per year to the very highest standard. Here we see de Marton at his blackboard. Now, only 2 students were admitted to this course in the first year, but they both went on to great renown and success, Matt Reichman and Jacques Bertin. Now today, Bertin is probably the name which is most readily known to us. He would go on to play a significant role both in the development of French cartography institutionally and in his seminal books on cartographic theory, most notably this one here, Semiology of Graphics. However, at the time, it was the 24-year-old Reichman that was the star pupil and the 16-year-old Bertin that very much played a supporting role. And we see this in de Marton's rapports, annual rapports to the University Annales, in which he tells us that Ms. Reichman prepared the complete illustration of a work on political and economic geography, and has more or less finished with the help of Jacques Bertin, the preparation of a wall map of Poland. She also collaborates in de Marton's great project of the time, his Atlas de France. Now, upon graduation, Reichman moved swiftly into paid employment as a cartographer. And here's a kind of selected bibliography of her major works. And I want to draw your attention to 2 points here. The first is the congested time period. So we see 1938 was very much a kind of annus mirabilis with 4 major works published and a 5th, Pringle's China's Struggles for Unity, was meant to be published in 38, ends up being published in the first month of 1939. The second thing I want to draw your attention to is her kind of gradual growth to prominence as a name. So she starts off not on the front cover, but on the inside here, maps by Reichman. Graduates to the front cover, text by Pringle, maps by Reichman. And then becomes co-author. We see here this work, Hudson and Reichman share equal billing. And eventually to top billing, Martha Reichman, sole authorship, and the descriptive text is very much a secondary consideration. Okay, I'm going to move on now to her work in support of Sheila Grant Duff's Europe and the Czechs. Now, Sheila Grant Duff was a British foreign correspondent, again, a very young woman, 25 at the time that this was published in 1938. And it was a book written in haste to convince the British in particular of the need to defend the sovereignty of Czechoslovakia. It was published very much in haste. Grant Duff forfeited her royalties in the first 50,000 copies in exchange for sped up production and the necessity that this book get out there. And she insisted that free copies be delivered to every MP. It didn't only go to the MPs, it was, of course, targeted for wider dissemination. It was part of Alan Lane's Penguin Special series, which was designed for cheap public consumption. We see here Alan Lane beside his Penguin Incubator, which is something of a marketing gimmick. But it was true that these volumes were available on every railway station in the country. And it was a success in terms of sales. The book sold 180,000 copies in its first 3 weeks. However, it did not, of course, prevent the Munich Agreement. And here we have a passage from Sheila Grant Duff's memoirs, where she recalls traveling back to London on the 30th of September, 1938, and seeing in W.H. Smith the morning newspapers announcing the Munich Agreement beside her book, Europe and the Czechs. And she writes, against the background of a map of Europe all in black, its cover showed the blood-red outlines of a Czechoslovakia that no longer existed. It was my first sight of this now useless book. If we open the book to take a look at the cartography, we see here this illustration by Reichman, of course, as a German threat to Czechoslovakia and Czechoslovakia's natural defences. I want to make a couple of points here. The first is its obvious kind of consonances with geopolitical mapping in terms of the way in which Reichman illustrates the threat to Czechoslovakia but from encirclement from Germany. It's very much the inverse of contemporary forms of geopolitical mapping that map the threat to Germany from encirclement by Czechoslovakia. But the second point I want to make kind of runs counter to that one, and it's the way in which Reichman felt uncomfortable with certain elements of geopolitical orthodoxy. And here I'm going to turn to the archive, Grant Duff's archives that possessed at the Bodleian. And we see in the archives that Sheila Grant Duff had requested that Reichman only show the Sudeten Mountains in order to emphasize this point of Czechoslovakia's natural frontiers. But Reichman protests. She writes to the publisher saying it would much exaggerate their importance in the middle of Europe. And as a matter of fact, personally, I do not believe anymore in natural defensive frontiers. And we see here the compromise that was reached, which was the Sudeten Mountains as shown in black and other mountains in hatching. Okay, so I'm going to move on now briefly and to kind of cover the rest of her career. In May 1939, Reichman sails with Vincent Chernovsky to Cape Town, where he had been appointed vice consul and where they married. In 1940, the family with a new baby son emigrated to Washington, D.C., where Martha's family already lived. And while in the U.S., Martha published a series of atlases to educate the public on the geostrategy and geography of the World War then being fought. And we can come back to this if you want to the questions. Meanwhile, Vincent had started work for a major pharmaceutical company, which led the family to spells living in Mexico, then after the war, Argentina, Egypt, Iran, and Greece. In 1951, Martha was diagnosed with cancer, but she remained active. She used a commission for the Argentinian National Airline to pay for a trip to see her family in France. And while there, she flew to Washington, D.C. for the 1952 International Geographical Congress, where she served as the official translator for the section on cartography. In 1958, Martha needed a major operation, so the family moved to Princeton, New Jersey. And in 1961, moved back to Athens, Greece, where she died at the end of 1964. So hopefully this has shown something of the international life and cartography of a woman who, in a brief but extraordinary period that coincided with a more general ascendancy of the importance of cartography to political communication and education, was very much one of the most prominent and bankable cartographers in the world. And I'll end there and invite any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Ben and Mike, for that really fascinating contribution. I'm sure I'm one of many people who feel we should have heard more about Martha Reichman before. So thank you for alerting us to her importance. So a number of questions coming in here. The question about the international school which she's attending and where she gets much of her geographical cartographical training. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the students there and the curriculum and what it was intended for.
Sure, I can say something about that. It was, it was kind of the first international school, and it really had this extraordinary ethos of it was there were there was a free discipline. The students were not to be disciplined. There was mixed sex, which was unusual, certainly in Geneva at the time. It was a very kind of modern school. It was a very self-consciously modern, and it was also self-consciously internationalist, and as befits its sort of status as an international school serving the kind of the international institution of the League of Nations. And so, I think you can see this kind of modern ethos, certainly in the choice of staff they hired, and also I think in the kind of the worker that Reichman and other alumni ended up going on to do.
And was Reichman attracted to it because it had an emphasis on geopolitics and cartography, or did she sort of get her interest in geopolitics and cartography because she was there? I mean, which way did the causal relationship go?
I think both, actually, in that particular case. But it is worth emphasising that, you know, in the aftermath of the First World War, there was this sort of belief that you needed to completely transform the education system, and that disciplines, the traditional disciplines, were not going to work for the cultivation of an international sensibility. And so the Geneva School was part of a much wider idea that you would relaunch higher education. This is the origins of international relations as a science, as a subject. So it is part of a much wider initiative, which, interestingly, lots of British people were prominently involved in, including lots of people at Oxford, as you well know, Gilbert Murray and Alfred Zimmer, and all those sorts of people who were very prominently involved. But certain places became very influential in this, notably Geneva, as a kind of international centre. So it's different, though, because to the degree to which geography was prominently positioned within that curriculum. And that was not always the case in the way the international relations as it evolved. I was often quite suspicious of geography because of its associations with an imperial past. And the notion that you could have an international geography was itself quite a contentious argument. But the one in Geneva was an attempt to do precisely that. Internationalize the mind, but internationalize geography as well.
Fascinating, thank you. And we've had a question about Martha Reichman's personal politics, and perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that in the context of the maps that she draws and how she chooses to represent them.
Yeah, it's a really great question. There's a lot to kind of infer. It's hard to nail it down. There's references to her as being known as a Bolshevik when she was at Ekelan. And certainly that she goes on to illustrate Alexander Rado's socialist atlas. And so we can perhaps infer something from those references. But I think it's notable that as she kind of moves away from the cartography that she does for other people and towards her own cartography, this becomes much more kind of muted, and it becomes less overtly political in that sense, and more, I guess she'd think of it as illustrative of kind of trends, global trends, rather than persuasive.
Thank you. Well, I'm sure we could spend the rest of the afternoon talking about Martha Reichman. She's obviously an absolutely fascinating figure that we should know more about, but I'm afraid time presses, so we must leave it there and move on to our next paper. But thank you both very much indeed for that really, really fascinating and intriguing talk.